Talking Seinfeld is brought to you by the Four Finger Discount Network.
Look at this guy. Are you crazy?
What are you doing? Hey! You're stealing my space!
George, wait, you don't know who this guy is. People kill for a parking space in this city.
No. He's not getting away with this.
George!
Hey, what are you doing? I think I'm parking my car. You can't do that. You can't just sneak in from the back like that.
I'm not sneaking. I didn't even know you were parking. You were just sitting there three spaces up.
Well, if you didn't think I was parking, why did you put it in head first?
Well, that's the way I park! Anyway, you didn't start backing in until I pulled in.
I was in the middle of a conversation!
Hey, buddy, what can I tell you?
All right, the point is, I was here first.
I was closer to this space than you were!
But I'm backing in! You can't put it in head first!
I can if I have room!
Welcome to Talking Seinfeld, the podcast where we discuss everything we know about the show about nothing. This week, we are here to review the episode, The Parking Space. I am Dando.
I am Guy, and oh my gosh, can I relate to this episode in multiple ways, not just when it comes to car parks, but when it comes to just about anything. Dando, would you like to hear an anecdote?
Oh, I would love to hear your anecdote, Mr. Davis.
As many of my anecdotes do, this one starts with the lovely Louise. They all begin and end with the lovely Louise. But listeners of the show may be aware, or maybe I haven't disclosed, she was studying to become a counsellor, a therapist, and has actually qualified to do that. Now, she's rented a room in Geelong, so if you've got, I don't know, mental discontent or emotional discontent of any way, go see Louise. She'll sort you right out.
Can you book me in for 4 p.m. today, please?
This is our therapy. This is how we binge and purge, so to speak. But you know, before the actual business of getting clients through the door, we've got to decorate the room. Got to make it a safe space, so to speak. You know, we got a couple of very nice, comfortable chairs off Geelong Marketplace on Facebook. Lovely sort of orange thin corduroy. They're really nice.
Okay.
And Lou had her eye on this other chair out at a furniture store in North Geelong. Me being the supportive boyfriend, I'm like, well, let's go check it out. You know, I've got good taste. Maybe I can, you know, offer a bit of advice on it. So we go out, we look at the chair. I'm like, the chair's not bad. We get these kind of cushions and it compliments this way, blah, 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 blah. I like to think I know what I'm talking about. Everyone's looking at me like, what kind of shit is he talking? But while we're looking at this chair and it's floor stock, the only one left.
Okay.
You know, we're taking seats on it like, oh, it's comfortable. Yeah, this will work. Oh, this cushion works with it. One of the women who works there comes over, picks up the chair and says, I just sold it to these people.
No, you didn't.
And we were like, bitch, what the fuck?
So what happened? So no, you can't do that. You actually can't. No, if you're sitting on it, what is she?
We weren't actually sitting on it on that stage, but you know, it was clear that we were circling it and trying to make up our mind about it. And then this other couple who had clearly seen us, two very attractive, stylish people looking at this chair going, I want a bit of that Guy and Lou action, so to speak, swooped in and took our chair.
I would be ropeable. So what happened? The lovely Louise would not have taken this, surely.
I think because she was in two minds about it.
Okay.
We viewed this as kind of like the universe sending us a message.
So she didn't really like it, you did. So what she did was she told this other couple, hey, my partner wants this. I don't really want it. I don't want to tell him that it's bad though. So how about you buy it? I'll give you the money to buy it.
The chair's been taken by these people. We also saw that they were buying some other thing that looked like a real piece of shit. So we're like, well, clearly these people have got terrible taste. So maybe this chair's not that good after all.
Yeah. Well, you have to send me a photo of this. Did you have a photo of this chair? I'll have to see it at some point.
I think I did take one or two pictures. Okay. I'll find it on there. I'll find it on the.
I'll let you know once this has gone up, and you can post it up in the Patreon group so we can all know what we're talking about. So, but you did get chairs in the end, though.
We've got a better idea of the chair that we want. It's the same style but a different colour.
Is it like a long one of those long couch chairs, or is it just a chair?
No. It's a comfortable sort of armchair deal.
Armchair. Okay, cool.
But, you know, I mean, thinking about the parking space, thinking about this episode of Seinfeld, and, you know, when two people want the same thing and, you know, both people think they've got, you know, dibs on it or whatever, it can lead to frustration, it can lead to tension. And I tend to get very possessive about parking spaces, much like George does in this episode.
I had a similar thing. I've got another anecdote when it comes to parking, but recently Nicola, she never spends money on herself, right? She doesn't have the confidence to go try on clothes. She just has no confidence when it comes to that thing. But she's a terrible shopper when it comes to buying things for herself because she can't justify spending any money on herself. So she goes through all these things and she buys, you know, she'll try on 10 dresses and buy one. I'm like, you liked four of them. Oh, I only need one. I'm like, you liked four. You've got the money for four, buy four. But anyway, so we're in Maya here in Geelong and Nicola's size, she's going through these dresses on the clearance, right? And only have a certain amount of sizes on the clearance thing. And Nicola's sort of going through, looking for a size. And then this woman sort of swoops in and just sort of grabs one off. And that was the one size that fit Nicola on this dress that we've been shopping for like an hour and she finally found something she liked. This woman just sort of took it off, right? And I'm thinking in my head, this is not going to fit you. And she's looking at it and she's looking in the mirror and I'm thinking in my head, am I going to have to fucking settle some bitches here? But thankfully, she came to her senses.
Brendan and Dan are going to have to choke someone?
And I sort of said, I said, as if that dress is going to fit her. Because she was bigger. And I said it louder.
Wow, man.
And she looked at me. She gave me a dirty look. And she threw the dress down the couch and walked off. And I was like, hey, at least my wife got the dress that she wanted now. But no,
sometimes
the thing is, though,
you got to play dirty.
This is the thing. I'm like, you might be buying that dress to maybe one day fit into it, but you ain't fucking getting that. You ain't fitting into that dress today, honey. My wife's been shopping for an hour and she wanted that dress and she didn't want to tell this woman that she wanted that dress. I'm getting you that dress because I'm going to go home. but when it comes to parking spaces, right? I may have told this on another podcast, but one time at the Geelong waterfront, right? It's one lane each way.
Oh my God. Parking at the Geelong waterfront.
Yeah. One lane each way. Angle parking, right? And it's, as Guy just said, it's very busy. Not New York level busy, but it's hard to get a park on the actual waterfront in the angle parking, right? So we've got two kids and they want to play on the grassy area. You know, the grassy area near the waterfront there. Okay. So I'm thinking, all right, the closer we can get to there, the better because I don't want to have to walk too far with the kids because they always get too tired, blah, blah, blah. And they don't want to get in the pram and all this other shit, right? So we're driving down. This park's just available. And I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. It's meant to be. I go to pull in. This woman starts walking out of the park and puts her hand up. And I went, what are you doing? She's going like this, waving her hands, going, no. It's my park. No. And I'm trying to, and I'm in the left lane. So I'm in the left lane turning left into an angle park. She's standing in the car park. There's no cars in front of me, right? So I'm holding up traffic going, move, fucking move. This isn't your, you can't, what, you got no car, move. She points to the other side of the road, two cars deep. Her husband is down on the other side of the road in traffic. So there's a red light on the other way, right? So he's idle. He's stationary in traffic on the opposite side of the road, facing the other direction, waiting for the green light so he can move forward in traffic. And he's got his wife to get out of the car and stand in the fucking car park on the other side of the road, blocking anyone from getting in. And I'm going, move! And I start moving the car forward. And she's not moving. And I said to Nicola, am I going to have to hit her legs? And Nicola's going, Brendan, just go find her. I said, Nicola, no, she cannot fucking do this. So I start turning into the park. He starts honking his horn, waving his hand out the window. I move a little bit more forward. She isn't moving. She is not going anywhere further. And she had that look in her face like she was about to bang on my car. So I thought, fuck it, the kids are in the car. I left. But I tell you what, if my kids were not in that car, she was getting run down.
Absolutely. And you cannot you would be do justified that. No, you cannot do that.
He was down in traffic. Like two cars deep, further down in traffic, stationary, sent his wife to walk across the street to stand in a car park, mate.
No, there's an exclusion zone, you might say, when it comes to that kind of
thing. He wasn't even on the right side of the road.
Yeah, look, if he was on the other side of the road, but right next to you,
yeah,
had his indicators on.
Still.
And also if his significant other hadn't been so much of a you-know-what. I mean, if he's like, my husband's right there, we're just trying to get this part. You'd probably go, it's the Geelong waterfront. It's a nightmare at the best of times. Okay, I'll do the right thing this time. But this combination of elements and her just go, no, not gonna fly. I was so angry. Justifiably so. I mean, it's amazing how worked up we get over car parks.
And that's what I was going to say. And at the end of the day, it was only because it was over a car park. And I'm thinking, you look back now and think, why are we so angry? But it was more like the principle of the thing. I was like, no. No. You cannot do that. And I was so disappointed at the time. But at the end of the day, I parked like 100 metres down the road. It was fine. Why do we let the parking spaces get to us? But it's like a sense of pride. It's a sense of ownership. It's like, this is my park. You will not take it. I found it first. You cannot have it.
It also feels like they're at such a premium.
Yeah, especially now in Geelong. Because Geelong used to be what they called Sleepy Hollow, where we live here in Geelong. Hmm. And now it's just gone kablamo. And it just seems like the population has tripled. That's what it feels like anyway. You go to the city, what used to take you 2 minutes to get through takes you like 20 now.
Indeed. Everybody's coming to G-Town. And not just because it's the home of Dando and Guy.
No, not at all, no.
But I think, you know, a situation like this and the emotions that it elicits, clearly very heated ones, certainly in our case, and I imagine for many other people as well. It speaks to the genius of Seinfeld that they're able to recognize that, pluck it out, and spin it into gold, as they have with this episode, The Parking Spot, or The Parking Space.
I've just got here a great way to take something that happens every day, not just in New York, because sometimes it can get very New Yorkish, the things that happen in Seinfeld.
Yes.
This is universal, as you were saying, and to be able to drag it out for 22 minutes and keep it so entertaining when nothing was really happening, it was just, you know, two guys fighting over a parking space for essentially the entire time. It's, like you said, the beauty of Seinfeld. It's the genius of the writing.
Yeah, and they recognised as well that this is not just an issue that only triggers certain people. Everyone will have an opinion on this. You see it when George and Mike Moffat are, you know, just refusing to give an inch either way, and this crowd of people on the sidewalk on the footpath are just. No, you've got to do this. No, there's rules and regulations, this kind of thing. We live in a society. So, I was very happy with the way they did that and very happy with this episode overall.
And they never do settle it because even the cops are debating at the end of the episode. There's never a clear indication. But Larry David said in the Inside Look documentary on the DVD that, you know, he agrees with George. You know, you can't pull in front first into a park, especially if someone's already there about to reverse. But what I love about this episode is the fact that things like stars are seem to align for Seinfeld. So this was filmed outside, right? Not like in an actual outdoor lot, and actually had an audience there of about 100 to 150 people coming and going throughout the day, right? Because apparently it took 4 to 5 hours to film this scene with the parking space, right? But the way that it gets darker and darker, that's just because it took so long to film that it became nighttime. But that really emphasized how long they'd been there for. That wasn't planned. Yeah. That just happened because it took so long to film.
Oh, how serendipitous. That's good. That's good stuff. I love it when something like that happens.
Yes. But did you know this was actually written or co-written by one Greg Daniels?
I did notice that. That's actually my first note in my notes. Greg Daniels, co-creator of a little show called King of the Hill that a couple of guys from Geelong just happened to be talking about on podcasts.
Yeah, speaking of the Hill, if you haven't checked it out yet, make sure you do so and hit that subscribe button. We'd appreciate the support there. But he also worked on The Simpsons, you know, Four-Finger Discount, would do that. What didn't he work on, Greg Daniels? He just seemed to be all over animation in the 90s, didn't he?
He did. He's got his fingers in many, many pies.
Yes, and a man knows what he's talking about. Apparently, this whole story was based on something that happened with his father.
I imagine everyone's got a parking story. You just had one.
Yeah, everyone would have at least a traffic-related story, wouldn't they?
Mm. So I guess this is the point where we have to come clean and disclose when it comes to parallel parking. Are you reversing in or are you going in head first?
If you're able to go in forward, I do, if I'm able to, mm-hmm. right? Just makes it easier. But you should go in reverse. I mean, if there wasn't that much, I don't think there's enough room to really go in forward there. Like the amount of space there, like that's a reverse in. Like I think you should always be reversing in parallel parking, personally. But I break the rules if I'm able to and just go forward and because I can't parallel park.
Well, that's the thing. If there's a big enough spot, you know, and you can drive in head first, then yeah, by all means do so. But it's often the case that you'll go in and you'll be on like a weird angle and you're going to have to reverse out again and you're doing a lot of wheel spinning in situations like that, you know, 8 times out of 10. So I might just be saying this because, look, I don't boast about a lot of stuff. I don't have a lot of stuff to boast about, Dando, but I can parallel park like a fucking wizard.
Yeah, you said that. I immediately thought of you when George was like bragging about his parallel parking. I'm like, oh, this is totally a fucking guy on his first date with Louise.
It's like, check this out, baby.
You're about to see some magic.
You're about to see as good as Guy gets.
Yeah. But do you feel like this episode felt like one of those real-time episodes, kind of like the Chinese restaurant, things like that? Even though it wasn't, it felt that way, I thought.
It had that kind of immediacy and that kind of sort of tension that refused to, sort of let up, really. Yeah. I mean, not like white-knuckle tension, more like you're getting more and more frustrated and angry by the situation. It's just slowly building all the time.
Because you had the through line of the boxing match.
True. Yeah, that adds a good element to it, I got to say. Yeah. I mean, it felt real time, as you said, though. I mean, even though it's not. But, yeah, it just had that feeling of, oh, when's this going to let up? Or, when's the tension going to break on this? And it never really does. It's kind of the genius of the episode.
Well, I thought that whole boxing match element was very nostalgic for me because this was, 1990? When did this air? 1992, I want to say, wasn't it? 92, right? Mm-hmm. Back in a time when there's a live pay-per-view on or a big boxing match or sporting event or concert, whatever, you couldn't just stream it whenever you felt like it later on. When it was live and you had to watch it then. If you weren't taping, you had to then watch it. So the fact that we've all had that moment who grew up in the 90s or lived through the 90s where something was about to come on TV and then something goes wrong and you're like, fuck, I'm going to miss this one thing I've been looking forward to this entire time. I'm going to miss it. And then for me, it was the South Park. Remember that I've told you that the Cartman's mum's a dirty slut when they had the finale or whatever it was. And the family were all at the beach, and I'm like, we've got to get home and watch Cartman's Mom's a Dirty Slut. It was so, I had to see that finale. Otherwise, you're never going to see it again. There was always that sense of, well, if I don't see it now, will I ever see it back in the 90s? And that's what this was sort of building off of.
You had to be very proficient with programming a VCR or something like that.
Yeah.
Or just, be on standby to push those two buttons down at the same time or whatever. Or, just hope for a repeat or a rerun or something like that. But no, I mean, it certainly did have that feeling of miss it now, gone forever.
Because pay-per-views were like, now they're not dead, but they're dying. They're like, you get the occasional wrestling pay-per-view or a boxing, is it Triller, whatever it is, the Jake Paul boxing events, the celebrity showdown, basically, things.
Or UFC fights or MMA fights.
UFC, yeah. So UFC is kind of like the modern day boxing now, isn't it? Like they're the ones that people seem to be looking forward to the most. You have your boxing pay per views, but they're not UFC level anymore.
It really is sort of taken the place of heavyweight boxing and championship boxing and stuff like that. Or definitely, if not raced right ahead of it, it's certainly got maybe a head or two ahead of it at this stage. Yeah, I mean, I was listening to a lot of podcasts about because Creed 3 is in cinemas now. Guys, review coming soon. Trust me.
Yep.
but a lot of them were one in particular was talking about how, boxing just doesn't have the cachet that it used to have. It doesn't have the mass appeal that it used to have. And, MMA seems to have kind of stepped up. And wrestling also, to some degree, in terms of, like, big physical male sport that, and female as well, sorry, but primarily male. It seems like those things are taking precedence over, say, boxing.
But I just like that aspect to it, just the way that sort of Kramer and Jerry were excited for it at the start, the little play boxing.
Yeah, they're
like
doing a little sparring with each other.
It's coming, the event's live time, like that countdown, like it's on in 5 minutes. Like I loved that thrill when I was a kid, like being a big wrestling fan, skipping school and watching the WWF pay-per-views back in the day on a Monday morning here in Australia. But I also liked here in this episode, they brought up the flea market. Now, we recently toyed with the idea from our man, I believe it may have been Pat Wright, who wrote into us, one of our first ever patrons. He wrote in with an idea for the flea market story. And I thought that would actually be a nice sequel to this one, where they actually do invite Kramer to the flea market this time. But overall, this was a really fun episode, that starring, obviously, Lee Arenberg, who is one of those guys who's been in a lot of things, but he's never really been the star of what he's been in, has he?
Well, no. I mean, I must admit, when he first showed up, I'm like, who's this guy? I know this guy. I mean, I thought it was like David Cross from Mr. Show and Arrested Development and all that kind of stuff. But, a bulkier, angrier version, if you can have an angrier version of David Cross. And I was like, I know this guy. And all the way through, I'm sort of racking my brain. And then the end credits come up and I say, oh, Lee Arenberg, who I primarily know as one of the guys from, one of the henchmen from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
A performance that I really liked as well. I mean, he fit really, he seemed to have that Seinfeld energy and a really good antagonist or opponent for George. They seem like two sides of the same coin, or even the same side of the same coin, really.
My note says George with testosterone.
George on the tee.
Yeah, so basically he's just George if George... Because you get a sense that Mike would be the kind of guy that would throw some punches, right?
Oh,
George,
yeah.
George would never throw a punch. He'd try and find a way to talk himself out of throwing a punch. You know, so George is the guy... They both probably hate the same things. They probably have more in similar with each other than what they actually realize, these two characters. But Mike and George, when it comes to resolving something, just take two different approaches. George is the... How can I weasel my way out? And Mike's like, motherfucker, let's throw down.
I don't think Mike would be all that good at fighting, but he'd be enthusiastic.
He'd throw some punches. Yeah, he'd go swinging. Yeah, but also, too, though, at the end, we also say, not quite the end, but when Jerry tells him, I know what you've been talking about, and he tries to sort of talk his way out of it.
Yes.
He comes across like such a... When he yells at Kramer and says, why'd you tell him? I'm like, he's a scary dude. He's a little ball of energy. He just comes across... I think the word to describe Mike would be unpredictable.
Yes, volatile. You've got to watch out for guys like that. Who they may not seem like trouble, but it's the Gimli effect.
We also get the first appearance here of Matthew and his mother, who make their next appearance in the non-fat yogurt when Jerry ruins his father's business by spoiling the old non-fat aspect of it. I think the non-fat yogurt will be up there with like top five most iconic episodes. Right, you got Soup Nazi, the non-fat yogurt. What else would be up there? The contest. Yes. There'd be another one. Yeah, but they're certainly the best ones. Still all to come. But also, did you know? So he mentions here, Kramer says that, you know, I think you're pregnant. You know, congratulations. But Julia was actually pregnant when they filmed this. She's actually pregnant during this time. She's wearing a lot of baggy clothes because she's actually pregnant with their kid.
Congratulations, JLD.
Yeah. Now, getting back to... earlier on, when we were discussing how they filmed it outside. So basically, they had the set outside. They had a little stage, like a tiered seating with like 100 to 150 people coming and going. They said, though, Tom Sharona says it didn't really work, though, because it wasn't on the soundstage. The actors couldn't hear the response from the audience, and the audience could barely hear them because it wasn't mic'd up properly. So the cameras were picking it up, but the crowd couldn't get it. They could sort of hear Mike yelling occasionally, but it didn't have the same effect. It's kind of like, oh, we're going to watch Seinfeld, but it doesn't feel like we're watching a proper Seinfeld sitcom setup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I imagine it would sort of possibly throw your timing or your interaction off, yeah. But it, to the show's credit, it doesn't really seem that way.
No.
It still, you know, has that quintessential Seinfeld zip.
That is a good one still.
Yeah. One of my favourites.
What were your favourite moments from the episode?
I was very taken with the whole talk of hats and... you know, disappointing people if you were, or yeah, a hat being like sort of false pretense.
I was going to ask you, is this somewhat true to an extent?
In my case, no, not really. I mean, anytime I tend to wear caps and hats a lot because, you know, first of all, yes, I'm bald as, and secondly, I'm very pale. I mean, I tend to burn very easily, so it's like, I could wear I'll generally put sunscreen and a hat on just to double up. It's like wearing two condoms. But no, I mean, I'm not necessarily thinking, I'm not going to go on a first date wearing a hat thinking, I'm not going to take this off just, you know, I'm not going to give anyone any extra ammunition against me or anything like that. I can see why people would do that. But I just thought it was very, very funny that that George would be like, oh, I wish I was around in the 30s and 40s, you know, yeah. Oh, heaven for bald men. But I thought that whole riff was pretty hilarious, actually. I was a big fan of that. And I also like the analogy of parking and prostitution. If you can get a free park, then you take it. You know, paying for parking, I don't know, it feels kind of sordid.
Well, I've got an anecdote from that same shopping day when it comes to paying for parking as well.
Oh, my gosh.
we'll get to that when we get to that moment. But yes, I was another moment where I was none too impressed.
Well, what were your favourite moments from this episode?
I enjoyed when Kramer says, well, I usually park in front first. Front first? That's how you park when you're pulling a bank job. I also loved the scene where Julia walks in, Elaine bursts in. She's like all disheveled. She's gone full story. You know, these kids were chasing us, but the Hennigans. And she tips it in the sink when Jerry's not looking. And the look on Jerry's face like, the fuck? You drank all that? You know, like, I just thought it was so acted so well without any words being used. It was just very, very, very good. Also, the bit that tickled me the most was we come back from commercial and they have selected two different drivers to park their cars for them because they don't trust themselves. I'm like, that is awesome. Like, the these guys like are so ridiculous. But the fact that they're all everyone's gathered around, they're standing there waiting for their cars to get parked because they don't trust each other. I'm just like, this is just so Seinfeld, but I just love it. And the fact that it got darker over the commercial break, like they've been there for a while, yeah, it's just so awesome.
Could you spell that, please?
No. Next question.
All right, it's time for some trivia, Mr. Davis. Before then, we need to read out the names of the people who support us here each and every week on the Four Finger Discount Network. Remember, guys, $5 or more each week gets your name read out on the podcast. So, first of all, shout out to our man, Elliot J. O'Neill, the Simpsons Index podcast, continuing to support us here with his $100 patronage. Don't forget, guys, check out the Simpsons Index podcast hosted by Elliot J. O'Neill and co. And Guy and myself were on there late last year as well. It was a hell of a good time. The Simpsons Index podcast. Also, our man, Andrew Zur, for his $50 support each and every month. Absolute legend. Also, our man, Heath Appleby, who supports us by donating $35 each month as well. Thank you so much, Heath. You're an absolute champion. And the following people as well. Jordan Moleman, Richie, Christopher Darby, Jonathan Rossi, Zach Prillett, Timothy Burleson, George McMenemy, Stephen Roberts, Sean Deavy, Pete Anderson, Andrew Davis, Ryan Dunlap, Jared Howard, Kevin Dental Plan Flood, Joel Yoland, Katie G, Daniel Kotnick, Shannon Hofer, Reese Roberts, Bella Winderbank, Mark Boston Burgess, Jack McFadden, Preston Murray, Adrian McLeod, and Lewis Kavanagh. And thank you to the following people who have now joined the Four Finger Discount family. We have Ryan Simmons, Ashley Anderson, Grant, J-Man Willie, Haley Parker, Karen Tien, Adam Sullins, Peter Biscop, Jack Worcester, Ferdinando Bianchini, Kelly Clifford, Daniel M. Mart, Reese Wilson, and Monica Sonsin. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us here and supporting us here on the Four Finger Discount Network. Remember, $5 or more gets your name shouted out on the podcast, early access to all the shows, and much, much more. Mr. Davis, what's your first trivia question? Hit me.
Well, before we get with that, I think I'm going to walk around for the rest of the day, and I say this with all due respect to the rest of our new patrons, but I'm going to walk around saying, Fernando Bianchini.
It's a great name.
That's great fun to say. My first question to you, Mr. Dando, Jerry parked his car at the corner of what and what?
Oh, that was my first question, actually. Where was it? 84th and Columbus.
84th and Columbus.
Yeah. My first one was, where was the toll booth that Elaine said that they got harassed at?
Was it the Henry Hudson Parkway?
Henry Hudson
Homer
Parkway.
Hudson Park?
Yep, Henry Hudson. Yep, well done.
What's Homer Hudson? Was that ice cream?
I don't know. Let's Google it. Let's have a quick look. Homer Hudson. Anything you named something brand-wise Homer after The Simpsons was released is just asking for a lawsuit.
That is true.
Yeah, Homer Hudson chocolate ice cream. When was it established, though? Homer Hudson was a brand. It must have been before The Simpsons came out. Let's have a look. Homer Hudson's in Australia as well. How the fuck am I? It's a brand of ice cream.
Is it still available?
Homer Hudson is a super premium ice cream packed full of unapologetic chunks of everything a mouth could hope for. They've got 316 followers on Instagram. When did they last post? They last posted 405 weeks ago. So I would say to assume that they're probably not in business anymore.
I think Ben and Jerry got together and they kicked the shit out of Homer Hudson.
Yeah, yeah, they went to town.
And then Haagen-Dazs came in and just, you know, administered the coup de grace. But I remember those occasions when I was a starving freelancer and like, oh, I've made a sale, time to treat myself. And, you know, I'd go to the supermarket and get yourself a little tub of Homer Hudson because, like, oh, it's the premium ice cream, chock full of good stuff. But I'd forgotten all about it until just that very moment.
Yeah, I am funny with ice cream. If I'm going to go full ice cream, because I usually eat, like, the light ice cream because I'm just funny like that. But if I'm going to go full-blown ice cream, it's got to be, do you have chunks of shit in it? You know, it's got, like, cookies and cream with chunks of cookie and shit like that. Don't just give me, like, strawberry full-fat ice cream. I want chunks. It's going to be chunky ice cream. I don't know. What about you? Are you a chunky ice cream kind of guy?
On occasion, yes. I mean, I like a Rocky Road style ice cream. It's like, oh, yeah, there's a nice chunk of marshmallow or a nut or a, you know, bit of chocolate, something like that. But yeah, occasionally like a nice smooth one as well.
I saw a machine recently that came up. No, actually, it was Target, where it was like, you know where you got your Cold Rock ice cream here in Australia where they mix all different... Mm-hmm. You pay like $20 extra to just what you can do at home, basically. But it's a machine that you tip M&Ms and Smarties and lollies or whatever into it, and you sort of pull the lever, and it makes like a Cold Rock ice cream, like mixes it all through the ice cream. And I'm like, this is a genius idea. And it was only like $40. And I'm like, I could buy this, but I didn't buy it. But I'm like, if someone out there has got one of these machines, let me know if it works. I want to get it because just pouring all these sweets into it and just pulling the lever and having this chocolate ice cream full of sweets, that'd be the best.
Okay, Willy Wonka. Yeah, that does sound nice. am I asking you a question?
Yeah, you're asking your next one, yeah.
Okay. Where is the flea market located?
Ah, fuck. I should know this. Was it Westchester, whatever it's called? Worcester. Worcester, yes. Okay. My final question, because you stole my first one, was someone's yelling out, driving a truck, an ice cream truck. They're telling them to move because they got a whole truck full of ice cream here. Who did he work for? You can see the top of the sign on the door.
Oh. I'll
give you a clue. Spectre.
James Bond?
No, Phil Spectre.
Oh, Phil Spectre.
Phil's it was called.
Ah, okay. Shows where my head's at. All right, I have one more question for
you
if you're interested. Jerry, in his final stand-up, is talking about a game of musical chairs that everyone sat down in what year?
It was 1964. And the reason I know this is because I remember when I watched it, I was like, oh, that's the year the Beatles played in Melbourne.
It's amazing how our brains work.
Yeah, it really is. By the way, fun fact, the guy who was yelling out, the truck driver, his name is Michael Costanza, an old college friend of Jerry Seinfeld's who inspired the name George Costanza.
There you go.
Do you love Bob's Burgers? Of course you do. Who doesn't? Well, what if I was to tell you that if you supported your pals Guy and Dando for just $1 a month, you could help us finally launch a weekly Bob's Burgers podcast? Yes, we've set ourselves the goal of launching the new show once we hit 1,000 supporters, and we're currently sitting at 350. So, you know, there's still a way to go, but if you've enjoyed the 1,000-plus hours of content we've chucked out over the last 8 years, you can show your support by joining the Four Finger Discount family today and actually making it a reality. So go ahead, help us reach our goal and finally launch that Bob's Burgers podcast by going to patreon.com/fourfingerdiscount. You have the power inside you right now, so use it. The original air date of The Parking Space was April 22nd, 1992. It was directed by Tom Sharonez and written by Larry David and Greg Daniels. The episode kicks off with some stand-up discussing compact car parks. You do see these occasionally, and you're just like, okay, I'm not offended, but I'm just like, motherfucker, just why can't I park there? I get it. It's usually because if you park there, you're going to cause the person almost like adjacent to it not be able to back out. But I'm like, hey, that's their problem, not mine, right?
Yeah, I've been in a few occasions where it's like, oh, you're very close.
I could make this, I reckon.
Yeah. And then once you're in, it's like, yeah, you're right. It's somebody else's problem. I got mine. And as Seymour Skinner is prone to say, I'm in the Lions. You don't like it, go tell your mama.
Exactly right. That wasn't Skinner, though.
That was Mrs. K,
I think.
That was Mrs. K because, yes, of course, yes, Mrs. Skinner is going to hear about this, believe me.
Yes.
I got some bad news for you, buddy. I think your car got stolen again.
What are you talking about?
Well, you parked it on 84th in Columbus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I just walked by there and that car is gone.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Whoa, well, where is it?
What's the difference?
Well, there's no difference, you know, I'm just curious.
You always have to know everything that's going on, don't you?
What happened to the car?
If I don't tell you, it will kill you, won't it?
Yeah, yeah, it'll kill me.
You have to know. You must know.
I must know.
Well, I'm not telling you.
Oh, come on.
Nope, I don't think so.
Well, please.
Not today, pal.
Okay, I beg.
Now, see, just saying beg doesn't make it a real beg. You gotta put some beg into it.
Okay, please, please tell me.
All right, I'll tell you, but your begging needs a lot of work.
Okay, okay, what is it?
Come on. I loaned the car to George.
George, all right. Well, what for?
George and Elaine went to a flea market in Westchester, okay?
All right. I mean, why did they want to go there for?
Would you stop it already?
You know, why didn't they ask me to go?
I don't know. How am I supposed to know?
What, they don't like me?
I don't like you.
Well, if they like me, why didn't they ask me to go? Oh, yeah.
Did you think that was Kramer-esque to be annoyed that he wasn't invited to the flea market? I feel like Kramer's been very blasé. For him to hold such a strong grudge felt a little bit off for Kramer, in my opinion.
Well, he's so unpredictable, isn't he?
He is unpredictable, Kramer, yeah.
I mean, sometimes you think he's, you know, just go with the flow and does whatever he pleases, but sometimes you think he really wants to be part of the group.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Do you think he was more upset that he wasn't hanging out with George and Lane, or that he dipped out on potential bargains at the flea market?
Yeah, potential. I mean, I love the idea of going to like those we don't call them flea markets here. We just call them just markets, whatever.
Markets.
But no, they've got the mill markets here in Geelong, where it's just various stalls. I'm like, you know, I'm like, if I go there, I know I'm going to find something old that I don't need, but I want.
Yeah. Do you know how many times I've been to places like the mill market and pulled out leather jackets and think, maybe.
Do you immediately go bad to the bone? In your head.
Three times. Exactly three times I've done that. Yeah. And it's usually like some long black, you know, Keanu style, Keanu in the Matrix style. Oh,
the long trench coat one. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, I tend to be fairly picky about that kind of things, but like, oh, this is a pretty good one. And it's a bit of money, but it's a lot less money that I'd be paying if I got it new. But at the same time, am I the kind of guy who can pull off a, you know, I don't think I'd look like Neo. I think I'd look like Joe Pantoliano in The Matrix instead. So
eating a steak. So, eating him into space.
That's the thing. Every time Lou and I would go out to Parker's for a steak, I'd be wearing my cypher coat. This is juicy. Every look at who's this douchebag?
But imagine walking out of the meal markets wearing that coat, though, with the final song playing in your head from The Matrix. Just imagine yourself just flying into the sky.
You've just got like your MP3 player or something in your pocket or your phone.
Yes.
Let's bring ourselves up to the modern moment. Yeah, you've got Rage in the Machine just queued up on Spotify. It's like,
what song was that? It wasn't Killing the Name Of, was it? What song were they playing?
Is it, no, I can't.
Suppose I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up.
Because they had it at the end of The Matrix Resurrections, the latest one, but it was done by someone else.
Song End of Matrix. Let's have a look. Song End of Matrix. Yeah. It's Wake Up. Yes.
Wake Up.
Yeah. Yeah, that new Matrix, not great.
Yeah.
I watched it going, this is fine, but is it necessary? That I've actually said this numerous times. You find it with number 4 in a film franchise. It's never usually like terrible, but you're watching it going, was it necessary? No.
Yeah, I think this one's sort of running on fumes.
Yeah.
We're getting there.
It was a little bit too meta. It's a little bit too meta for my liking.
But very, very much too meta. Yeah. And there are people who are really into that kind of thing, and you know, more power to them. But
felt like a Saturday Night Live skit at times compared to an actual Matrix movie.
A little bit, yeah. And yeah, God bless Keanu. We all love him. But I think he's pushing 60, isn't he? Or he actually is 60.
He doesn't look it.
No, although he's starting to look.
Yeah, starting to. Especially when he shaves the mustache off in fucking Bill and Ted. I was like, whoa.
Yes. But you see pictures. I mean, John Wick 4 is coming up fairly soon.
Yeah.
Can't wait for it. Really looking forward to it. But you see the behind the scenes stuff where, you know, he's sort of talking about, oh, here's the making of it, and here are all these great action stars we're getting. It's like, dude, you're looking a bit kind of drawn and tired. And I hope John Wick 4 is great. I'm sure it will be, but I hope it might be the last one. I hope you wrap it up nicely. And then, you know, Keanu can just have a nice late part of his career doing, you know, romantic comedies or stuff where he gets to sit at a desk.
Liam Neeson walks up to him and goes, it'll happen to you. Liam Neeson's realized now, like, I can't do big action movies, but he just sort of you can throw the occasional punch now. He's always like an old retired FBI agent or whatever. Hitman. But, you know, get back to Seinfeld. So we got George here. Yeah. He's very happy with his hat, as you were discussing earlier. It was a bald paradise in the 20s and 30s. They didn't know it, you know. And that's the thing. You look back on photos from like the 20s and 30s and the fucking style of the people back then compared to now. Like,
oh, yeah.
You look at guys would wear a suit to go buy a pack of smokes from the milk bar. Now people wear fucking moccasins and trackies and sometimes no shirt.
Lou and I were watching Married at First Sight last night because I'm a good boyfriend and I'll watch Married at First Sight with my girlfriend. And you know, they had one couple sitting down for the, you know, the end of week debriefing or whatever it was. She looked like she was dressed to go to the Oscars. He looked like he was dressed to go to, you know, pick up fish and chips. And I mean, I tend to get a bit sensitive about that kind of thing because you'll see on, you know, social media all the time, like, women are always, you know, doling themselves up for their men, and men just aren't, you know, putting in the effort. And I'm like, oh, no, sometimes we put in the effort, but then you see things like, it's like, oh, no, we're really not, are we?
No. This is the thing. I was telling a guy off air, I've started exercising a bit now because I'm just like, all my nice clothes, they fit, but they don't quite fit. And I'm like, I just need to lose a little bit of weight because now I can be wearing my nice shit again because I've just gone like dad bod these last 12 months. It's just been fucking hard being a dad and just, you know, Holly's not sleeping and all this extra shit. So I'm just like, now I've got the time, I'm going to exercise, I'm going to fit into my nice, cool shirts and feel nice again.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is the primary reason men aim to lose weight. I mean, and maybe, and probably women too. You know, I mean, you can say, no, I want to be around longer for my kids, or I want to have a bit more energy. I want my clothes to fucking fit.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I've blown so much money on clothes. And, you know, I'm like you, Dan. I mean, I've got shirts that are like, yeah. If I wear this out, I'm looking a bit like a sausage. You know, this is a bit of a sausage.
A Christmas ham.
So, yeah, precisely. So I'm like, no, I'm very much with you. I'm like, I mean, as soon as we finish recording this podcast, well, maybe not as immediately. Maybe I'll take a few minutes just to take a breath. But then, no, I'm going for a run around the block and I'm going to keep running around.
You
the
should
block.
Get like a treadmill or a bike or something, just fucking watch movies and exercise at the same time. Kill two birds with one stone.
I know, but I'll actually like getting out and getting fresh air.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's good for your head. It's good for the head as well as the as well as the heart and body.
Yeah.
But so yeah, you Dan Dillon guy bringing you the Beefcake podcast.
George is he explains how he's worried about that first moment. He took the hat off. That's why, you know, he can't wear a hat around ladies, because he's just like, he's worried. What if they think I'm not bald? What was the point in your life where you just went, I don't care that I'm bald? Because like, being bald doesn't mean anything to me. I couldn't give a fuck whether you're bald or not. But as someone who is who's you know, you've said you've lived through it, right? What was the point where you just went, I don't care if anyone knows that I'm bald. I'm bald, and that's who I am. Well, do you think you lived vicariously through like the Bruce Willis era, where he was like, it's cool to be bald?
Oh yeah,
to an extent.
A bit, yeah. I mean, certainly when I first noticed it, that it was really thinning, I was like, well, this is a bit of a drag. I mean, the initial part, I'm like, I got a bit of recession there. That's not too bad, you know. But I've got enough left up top that I can, you know, swirl it and cover it all up. And it'll be fine. It'll be fine. But anyone who's suffered male pattern baldness, yeah, there's just some dreadful in-between stage where you know it's all going, but it hasn't all gone yet. And there's not much you can do with it. You know, I mean, that's usually the point where guys start shaving it.
Yeah.
Or just trimming it right down with the number one comb, because
I think it looks worse if you're trying to justify keeping the little bit. Sometimes you see the guys that have a little bit of fluff like an island in the middle of the head. It's like, just get rid of it.
Yeah, why? Yeah, no, yeah. That's not fooling anybody. yeah, I don't think I ever had any real moments of like denial or anything like that. I mean, Lou asked the other night if I'd ever thought about, hair replacement techniques or anything like that. I'm like, no. Never did. Mm-hmm. Mainly because when I was losing my hair, I was in the stage where those things just looked really obvious.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that. I knew I was just handsome and dashing enough with hair or without it.
Mm-hmm. You needed a Damoxenol from The Simpsons, Damoxenil, whatever it was called. but anyway, so Elaine moves the mirror so she can see her glasses. Causes George says this is what caused him to run over the pothole, but really, maybe he's not a great driver. But Kramer then cuts back to Kramer, and he's furious. He says, "Well, I don't like you. You've got problems."
Problems.
Jerry mentions that the fight starts in 35 minutes. They sort of pretend they're fighters. We're saying they're all amped up. They're really excited. And I think just little things like that create the sense that it's a big deal, this fight, which is why Jerry doesn't want to miss it. Mm. Things like they're clearly excited for it. Kramer says he's invited over Mike Moffat.
Oh, hey, you know, I invited Mike Moffat. You don't mind, do you?
No, I like Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got off the phone with him. You know, we had a great conversation.
Oh, yeah, what'd you talk about?
Well, actually, we talked about you.
Yeah.
He had some pretty interesting things to say.
Oh, yeah, what'd he say?
You have to know everything, don't you?
No, come on, Kramer, what'd he
say? Why is that? Why do you have to know everything?
Kramer, just tell me what the guy said.
Beg me.
Please, don't make me
beg. No, I want you to beg me. And I don't want you to say it. I just want you to put some beg into it. Go on.
Kramer, please tell me what the guy
said. No, that's not. No, I really don't think that's a beg. No, it's close, but...
Kramer!
Look, I can't say anything. You know, the guy told me this stuff in confidence. I'd be betraying a friend.
Well, you can't just mention it and then not tell me.
All right. I'll tell you, but you can't say anything to him.
Right? I'm not saying anything. I'm putting it in the vault. I'm locking the vault. It's a vault!
He thinks you're a phony.
He what?
I told you, he thinks you're a phony.
A phony? He called me a phony?
A big phony. Big phony.
Why did you tell me that if I can't say anything?
You begged me.
Kramer should use his judgment here. If someone says to you, one of your friends, you know, let's just say Tony, your friend, Tony, right? Anthony, Tony,
yeah.
Says to you, one of your other friends, I think he's a bit pretentious, that guy. You wouldn't then tell that friend, right? Or do you think it's your duty as a friend to tell them? I think you just don't say anything.
No, I don't think you say anything. I mean, yeah, you have to use your judgment in that regard. I mean, if someone really unloads on someone that you know...
Oh, you've got to stop them and, yeah, let them know.
Then you've got to sort of... Yeah. And also if, you know, that person is then being kind of false-faced to that person. So, hey, how you doing? And all that kind of stuff. Like, I think this person might be full of shit.
Yeah.
But... You know, if it's just like a bit of a phony, yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know, maybe they're just having a bad day or maybe they had a bad run-in, just one bad run-in and that kind of coloured their opinion in that way. But no, I'd kind of keep that to myself.
But Kramer here, he sort of falls behind the fact of, oh, well, you begged me. It's like, yeah, but you shouldn't in the first place have said, oh, well, he said some interesting things about you. It's like, as soon as you say that, you have to tell them now.
You do, don't you? Yeah, that's poor form.
Yeah, make some Jerry promise that you won't tell Mike. Which obviously he does later on. We get George here and he's blaming Elaine. He threw off his equilibrium when she moved the mirror. And she questions his driving and he does not take this well at all. And when he's sort of saying how he can do this and he can do that, I'm sure you could.
But men do get very defensive about their driving, absolutely, yes. Yeah, I mean, do you think you're a good driver?
I'm a good driver, not a good parker. This is the thing. Nicola, not a great driver. Good Parker, right?
Okay. You're a dream team.
Yeah, we're a dream team. The problem is that I call Nicola a zipper. She's very zippy with her parking. Like, with her driving, sorry. She's, you know, she's one of those people who, when I can see there's a red light ahead, right? I roll to the red light, slowly ease on the brake and just pull up, right? She has to drive, brake. I'm like, you saw it was red. Like, she's very often you're sort of like jerking in the car with Nicola because she doesn't. She likes to be on the move. She doesn't like to be slowing down. She's a very zippy driver, in and out of lanes. Parking, she's fine. Like, she's one of those pompous people that has to fucking reverse into a park. No matter where you are, she's going to reverse in. I'm like, Nicola, just pull it. It's easy to pull out. I'm like, you're holding up traffic.
There's like three parks.
Yeah.
You could have just driven in.
Jesus Christ. She reverses in all the time. But me, I'm a much better, I feel like I'm a better judgment of reading the play, I say. You know, when you read the play, it's like, all right, I can see that car, three cars ahead, has got the right indicator on. I'm going to get in the left lane now so I don't get stuck behind them whilst they're waiting for oncoming. Things like that. Nicola doesn't, she's not good at reading the traffic like that.
I too, I'm very much like that. Well, I like to think that I am. I'll tell you a quick story. I was going out with this woman. We were up in Melbourne where she lived, and I was driving her to work one morning. And I was also doing stuff for the radio at this time. I was doing movie reviews for the radio station down here in Geelong. So I had to do it over the phone. And I didn't have hands-free. So I basically had the phone in one hand. I'm driving her to work through this out of Melbourne suburb that's kind of busy. And it's not quite rush hour, but there's traffic on the road. And I'm driving with one hand. I got the phone in the other. And I'm zipping in and out between cars. And, you know, oh, it's a red light. I'm going to stop and all that. It comes to, you know, I've done my 5-10 minute review or whatever and hang up. This woman looked at me and said, don't ever do that again. She was just terrified.
I mean, I
feel bad.
If you ever drive me anywhere and you pull that phone out, I'd be like, mate, put that phone down.
So I'm like, yeah, I really enjoyed Agent Cody Banks 2 assignment. Or whatever. I'm just trying to, yeah, I've got my radio voice on and shit. She's looking at, don't ever do that again.
Was dating a woman.
Correct. <yeah.
laughs> I dropped her off and I never saw her again.
I think we should only see other people.
But yeah, so anyway, so George is he's angry that Elaine's questioned his parking. He says he's got a system. He looks for the dream spot. He won't park in the parking garage. He's going to find the dream spot where he drives around and around in like around the block and then works his way out, basically. I like the system.
That's an Australian thing. The Australian thing, we do the block. You do the blocky.
Yep.
It's like, you know, you drop someone. I was like, if I can find a park here, fine, but otherwise I'll do a blocky.
I'll go around the block. Yep. And he explains here that nobody in his family can pay for parking. It's like a sickness. He mentions his brother here, the last time we ever hear about George's brother.
I was thinking about that because, I mean, I've watched my share of Seinfeld, but I mean, I wouldn't call myself, you know, an absolute encyclopedia like you, Dana. But I was thinking, did Brad Garrett show up as like his brother or something? You know, I mean, I know Brad Garrett is Raymond's brother.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, did his brother show up? Who was his brother?
No, he never had a brother.
Never happened.
Yeah, no, it doesn't exist. Yeah. Last time it gets mentioned. He got mentioned in the suicide and he gets mentioned in this episode here. But yeah, my parking story, right? So I was out for shopping with Nicola that day. And it was our anniversary day, actually. We sort of went out shopping and sort of a day to ourselves. No kids, blah, blah, blah. She took the day off work. And it's called Westfield here, Shopping Plaza. We can park here, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like $1 for the first hour, you know, $3 for the first two, you know, $5 for the next four or whatever. And then we're like, all right, cool. Well, you know, if it's $5 for 4 hours, it'd be like, you know, $8 or whatever for like six or whatever. It'll just go up like $3 brackets. That's what it seemed. No. Once you go over 4 or 5 hours, it goes to $17.
Oh, my God.
I was furious. Nicola's like, don't worry about it. I'm like, no, it's the fucking principal. And I was so angry for like 5 minutes. Nicola's like, just calm down. Don't ruin the day. We had such a good day. I'm like, but why the fuck? Why is it $5, but we go an extra 3 minutes and now it's 17? Fuck you.
First of all, I really want to set up a chalkboard or a little scoreboard every time you say, it's the principal.
It's a principal.
I think you've just got so many principles that you follow in life.
Oh, man.
Or that you think people should follow in life. But secondly, that really sucks. I mean, yeah, just that. Oh,
like, how do they justify over 5 hours?
Tick over. I don't know how they justify it.
I think, this was my theory at the time, a casual shift has to be, I think it's 5 hours or four hours, right? So I think once you tick over 4 hours, it was like $17, right? Whatever it was the minimum casual shift is like 4 hours here in Australia, right? So I think it's preventing workers from parking there and taking up space from customers. They want workers to go park elsewhere and then customers can park in the shopping plaza, because if a casual worker is working more than 4 hours, they won't then park in there because they're going to pay $17. But if they're less than 4 hours, they're only going to pay five. So I think it's a way of weaning out the workers.
Well thought out, Dando. That's a good way of thinking about it. I mean, have you parked in Melbourne recently in the CBD?
I always park at Crown Casino.
Yeah, it's the way to go, in all honesty. I mean, I parked at a city car park, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, got up there nice and early. I'll take advantage of the early bird discount. And like, oh, it's $25 for this amount of time. Fine, good. I got there and I misread it, of course, because, I mean, I got back a little, I got back and I put the ticket in. It's like, that'll be $78, please.
78? Holy shit, $78?
Yeah, because they charge an extortionate amount per hour if you get in a certain time. And then I realized, oh, it's if you leave after a certain time as opposed to before a certain time, it's the early bird rate.
Okay.
So I'm like, yeah, because I went, I sort of pulled my ticket out and was, who works here? Explain this to me. And this guy said, yeah, you read it wrong. Don't worry. Everybody reads it wrong. Come back in 15 minutes. You'll be fine. It'll cost you $25. Oh, okay. I'm going to go have a cocktail.
Apologies for that black eye, sir.
Excuse me. Pardon me for spitting.
I was about to challenge him to a duel.
Slap him across the face with a glove. But, yo, parking. Parking. And see, Seinfeld knows what time it is. People just get worked up over it.
Yeah. But I just love the excitement of George when Elaine finds the park. See, I told you. I was right. You know, he's so jovial. But the thing is, he's so, you know, arrogant about his parking that he holds up, he wastes enough time talking about himself that gives Mike enough time to catch up and try to steal the park. So it's George's fault in the end for blubbing about himself for too long.
Indeed. Pride comes before the fall. By the way, what did you think of the hat and the sunnies?
Who was wearing the hat and the sunnies?
Well, George bought a hat and Elaine had sunnies.
Oh, Elaine had sunnies.
She bought some sunnies.
What did I think of him?
What did you think of him?
I thought George suited the hat for sure. I know Jerry makes fun of him and says hi, Indiana, but I thought the hat suited him.
It didn't fit quite right. I mean, he might have to sort of adjust that a bit more. I hated the sunnies.
You hated the sunnies, yeah. I mean, sunnies for me, they either look great or they look just obnoxious to me, sunnies. Like sometimes you see some people with glasses and they're like the big chunky ones just basically covering their face. I'm like, what are you doing? Nicola's one of those people that has to be wearing sunnies. Like, we're going in the backyard. Oh, where's my sunnies? Where's my sunnies? Or we'll get up to the car. I forgot my sunnies. I'm like, Nicola, we're driving to Macca's. Oh, it's too bright. I'm like, Nicola, you're not wearing your fuck. You'll be fine. People will see your eyes. You'll be okay. Stress less.
I'm Team Nicola. I can't leave the house without shades.
I need my sunnies. I can't go anywhere without my sunnies.
I'm like, I'm like, what's his name? Marlon Brando on the island with Dr. Moreau. Yeah. I've just got to have like the zinc cream all over whenever I leave the house and big shades.
But George, he says, you know, I wish you could make a living from parallel parking. I'm like, pretty sure a few episodes ago you had the chance to do that and you fucked it up, buddy, and you ruined Woody Allen's movie.
Good point.
Yeah.
But Mike, that's you told George.
This is where Mike pulls in head first, and as I've got my notes here, I'm completely with George here. Mike's doing the wrong thing. Plus, Mike's just a douchebag. I'm like, nah. They establish earlier. They establish early on that Mike's not a nice person. He's been talking about Jerry behind his back. So, as an audience member, you're like, well, I'm already Team George, regardless of whether he's right or wrong.
He talks behind your back, and he tries to pull in from the front.
Yeah. And Elaine there, she says she needs to go to the toilet, so she goes to tell Jerry what happened. She has to come up with an idea. He tells her, you know, think of something, and just to end the scene here, just both start honking their horns at each other. I'm a horn honker occasionally. I did it to an old guy yesterday who was just... I don't like honking old people, right? But when you're holding up traffic because, yeah, they don't know what you're doing or you forget where you are, I'm not sure, but we're in the car park. You know the car park at Woolworths on Paco? Terrible car park. Very busy, very small, right?
It is probably the second worst
besides Coles
supermarket car park in Geelong.
So this old guy,
we all know the worst.
This old guy pulls out, pulls out of the park. Everyone's waiting for him, and he just stops and he starts adjusting his mirrors. And I'm like, "Go, motherfucker, go!"
Here's where I get very angry because if you get into your car, your car is parked. You get into your car to pull out. It's on you to adjust your shit very quickly. First of all, do it before you even turn your engine on. You know, it's like, I'd better adjust my side mirrors or something like that. I'd better make sure the seat's right, all this kind of stuff. That's when you turn it on. Because the minute you hit your indicator and say, I'm leaving, that's when you leave. Do not sit there with your indicator on and then take maybe, don't even take 30 seconds. You just get out of there as quickly as possible. I fucking hate that.
Well, the people that sort of, they turn their car on in the parking space. And then they take it out of park, put their foot on the brake, so the brake lights come on. So you're sitting there waiting for them to come out, and they fucking don't come out.
It's like, are you moving?
Are you getting
moving?
Out? What the fuck are you doing?
You're about to move. You gotta go.
And then you start to go, and then they start reversing out, and you're like, oh, now you're going.
You've got to be careful how you use the, how you honk the horn, though. Because, yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever sort of gone, wah, to anyone. And maybe I think I could count on two hands the occasions that I've done that in all the time I've been driving. It's been a while. But, get a little at the lights, for instance, you know, you're at the green arrow. They haven't noticed the green arrow. Come on, we're gonna miss it. If you don't go.
If it's less than 2 seconds, that's the come on, buddy, it's okay. I'm not angry. More than 2 seconds, it's like, let's throw down.
Yeah, it's like a tap on the shoulder. Yep. It's like, excuse me, we're good to go.
Yep.
As opposed to
excuse me.
Fucking idiot.
But one more gripe to get out is people, when you're waiting for someone...
what a gripey episode this has been.
Waiting for someone at the petrol station, the gas station that we call it in America, you're waiting your turn and they get back to their car and then start fucking going through their wallet and start doing this, start doing that. And it's like, go to the park and do that. Go park over there and do your fucking wallet and shit. Don't do it now.
Or even worse than that, say there are two Bowsers, right? And they're both being used. The first person pulls out and the second one is there. And it's like, can I sort of sneak around and get into that first one? But often you can't. You just end up having to wait for this person forever.
Yeah.
Why do we even use cars? Let's just go back to horses.
Yes.
Okay. Now listen. We were at the toll booth at the Henry Hudson Parkway, okay? And there were these, like, this pack of extremely wild teenagers in a convertible behind us, okay? And for some reason, I don't know, they just started to taunt us. And so then we paid the toll, and then we went through, and then they started to follow us, all right? So George tries to lose them, but they were in this really, like, a souped-up car, you know? And so he turned off the road really suddenly, and the car was on two wheels, and I was just screaming. And George is such a great driver.
He is?
Oh, he is fantastic. And then they fired a gun right up in the air.
A gun?
I think it was a gun. And then they followed us all the way into the city, and then they just stopped, and they turned around, and they went home.
okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. God. Oh, by the way, the car hit a pothole and now it's making a clanking noise.
Oh, well, I mean, as long as you're okay, that's the important thing.
Exactly.
She's so great at this, isn't she, Julia? At just, yeah. She's told it once before, but it wasn't a bullshit story. It was her talking about some crazy thing on the highway. Was it the airport or something? It was the episode where they get the stranded at the party, wasn't it, or something? Or there was some.
I think so.
There was some episode where she tells a story about getting like stranded on like a highway or something, and she's just the madness of the traffic. She's so good at just George. I mean, Jason Alexander's great at it as well, but they do it in two different ways. She's almost like exhausted, where he's just like agitated. Yeah. When they tell the stories.
Yeah. That's a great way of putting it, that she's just sort of so worn out by, oh my God, all this happened.
I can't believe this. You won't believe what happened, you know. But just her emphasis on the words. And yeah. George is such a great driver.
George gets more worked up the more he tells the story. You can feel Elaine powering down.
Yeah. And if George hit a pothole. Now your car's making the clunking sound, but you know, whatever. Just sort of at the end of the story. But I love and he had a gun. He had a gun? I think it was a gun. It's always like the Elaine character went that one step too far and she was like, actually, I don't know where I'm going with this. I think it was a gun. Okay, tone this back down a little bit. But just her face at the end was just great. And I like the way they played it up like Jerry believed it. He didn't. He was playing them the entire time. So he goes to see George. First of all, when he yells at the window, crazy kids, huh? What? I thought it was so funny. And then Elaine realizes, oh, fuck, I've got to cover up for this. And then Kramer, he enters. He's not happy with Elaine. But so Kramer and Joe, they go to help. Elaine's going to come down after she's finished in the toilet. Mike says to George, "You know, I'm going to sleep in my car. George, I'll die out here. Like, there's no way either of these guys are going to lose. Like, George is going to go to the ends of the earth to make sure he wins this debate." And then we get the bystanders all debating as well. And Larry David has said that whilst he agrees that reversing in is the way to go, like George was right here, he wanted to make sure it was balanced out. So he wanted to make sure that the people who decide that driving in forward is the right thing, they get their fair share as well, which is why he had everyone sort of debating the police and the bystanders and things like that. Jerry here, you know, acknowledging, you know, says to George, Indiana, that to me was just like, it was just friends being friends, just a bit of banter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can see that the relationship between Jerry and George is so much more pleasant than the relationship with Mike and Kramer. I just feel Mike is just not a good person to have around. This is not, like we kept saying, unpredictable. He's not the kind of person you want at a party because one person says the wrong thing, your party's ruined.
Yeah. I mean, Newman's not a pleasant person to have around either, but he's sort of on the same wavelength as Kramer to some degree. Or they're...
He is who he is. He doesn't hide who he is.
I don't know. His unpleasantness synchronizes with Kramer's laid-backness.
But he doesn't pretend to like somebody. If he doesn't like you, he'll tell you that he doesn't like you.
Yeah.
You're looking tremendous. What do you want, some kind of regimen?
Yeah, 25% bran flakes. The 40% was too much, so I found a store makes it up special for me. They take it down another 15%.
That's killer! Killer! I love that!
You gotta use that. That's indefinite.
Come on.
Hey! Your friend here has some real problems.
Me? You see what he did here? You see how he tried to sneak into my space?
Hey, just because I went in front first doesn't mean I'm sneaking in.
You only went in front first because you saw me backing up and you didn't have room to parallel park.
I only went in front first because I could make it in front first, and if you pull out, I'll show you.
You got a friend.
I go in front first all the time. Oh, front first. That's how you park when you're pulling a bank job.
Did you talk to him?
Yeah, it's all taken care of.
You told him? What did you tell him?
I did a number on him. It was a thing of beauty. You really had to have been there to appreciate it.
Unbelievable. What did you say?
I told him a pack of teenagers in a convertible were terrorizing us, and they followed us into the city.
A pack of teenagers?
Yeah. By the time I got to the end of the story, he was so relieved that we were alive, he couldn't care less about the car.
You are a genius. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
What can I say? You know, it's a gift. I only wish I could teach it, but... You know, it's inborn.
And Kramer then asks her, confronts them, why didn't you invite me? And they realize, oh, that's what you're annoyed about? But you notice here Mike made fun of them for going to the flea market as well.
Yeah, you went to a flea market?
I'm like, fuck you, dude. Who is this guy? But they said they forgot. George has to go at Jerry. And Jerry's like, I don't know, wasn't supposed to say anything. And George is just like, you didn't exercise your judgment. Jerry here didn't do anything wrong, in my opinion.
I don't think so.
A, why would he think Kramer would be annoyed?
Yeah.
We've established that they're four friends who obviously have lunch together and things like that, but they have lives outside of each other as well.
That's the thing, yeah. They're not existing in each other's pockets.
No.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a massive overreaction from Kramer.
And he doesn't accept George's so-so sorry. This is where we get the ice cream driver, which was Jerry's college buddy.
Hey, move this car. I gotta get through.
You heard the man. I guess you better be moving your car. And like, you're not just gonna back it in if I do that?
Well, somebody better move something soon. I got a truck full of ice cream here.
We get back from commercial and they've got the two nonpartisan drivers to move the cars because they didn't trust themselves. And then Jerry questions the story. And, you know, George is going along with it. Elaine's going along with it as well. What did you do to my car? When Jerry goes full Jerry Seinfeld, it's just, there's no one like it really, is there?
It's so much fun to hear and so much fun to actually do.
Yeah,
to do it.
Yeah.
It's so much fun doing a Seinfeld voice.
I never said a good driver. I said I was a good parker. I was like, no. Rewind the tape. You said you're a good driver, buddy. And this is where Sid rocks up from the alternate side, old Sid. He's like, whenever you park cars, something goes on.
Hey, somebody better move these cars. You're making a commotion.
Hey, Sid.
Who are you?
Never mind who I am. I know who I am. Do you know who you are? Why is it every time you park a car in this block, everything gets disrupted and disjointed?
Sid, it's completely his fault.
All right. Why don't you start taking a bus?
It's now starting to get dark, and Jerry and Elaine say they want to leave, but George doesn't want them to. Then we got this old guy arguing with Matthew, the kid. I'm like, If that was my kid, I'd be like, oh, man, what are you doing? Go away. Leave my child alone.
I must admit, it's a combo you didn't really expect to see.
No. But then we see Jerry, he tells his father's business is closing down. Kramer then congratulates his mother for being pregnant. Have you ever witnessed a moment like this? I once, when I worked in the deli, had a worker compliment a customer on being pregnant when they weren't pregnant. I died inside for them.
You would, wouldn't you? No, I mean, I think I learned from a young age. It's like, never assume that.
No,
never assume that.
No.
Yeah. They could be in the delivery room. And you was like, getting your appendix out, man.
Because there was this sense of, it was a packed deli. Just this, like, everyone just went,
I'm going to turn on the slicer, buddy. Yeah. You can just go put your head in it.
I was like, oh, shit. It was one of those moments I will never forget. I just remember thinking, thank God that was not me. Here's the thing, though, right? I died inside picking up Elliot from daycare on Monday. Or was it Friday? No, it was Friday, right? So there is a little person, right, whose child goes to Elliot's daycare. And she picks him up every day, blah, blah, blah. When we get, usually about the same time as me. Elliot walks up to this woman right in her face and says, why are you so small? And I was like, oh, no. But she just went, because
that's my boy.
But she just went, because everyone's just super different, buddy. And she had, she took it like a champion. I was like, oh, yeah. And it made me realize I shouldn't have been embarrassed by that. A, he's four. He's not doing it from a malicious point of view. He's just asking questions because he's fucking 4 years old. And the way she handled it is how we should always handle it. We're all different. Doesn't make anyone worse or better. We're just different. And I was like, I fucking learned something today. But at that moment, for that brief 2-3 seconds, I froze. I didn't know what to do. I was like, oh, shit. But she was just like, we're all super different, buddy. And I was like, I'm sorry. And she's like, it's fine. And she just kept walking. I was like,
shout out to that little lady. Well done.
I was like, why did I panic? I literally panicked for a moment. But yeah, I learned something. Yeah, we're all different. That's all that matters. Tell your kids that we're all different and nobody's better than anybody else.
Of course, Kramer has to double down, though. He's like, are you sure you're not pregnant?
Yeah, no, I'm like, the hole's deep enough, mate.
Yeah, most people just take the L. Yeah.
Are you sure? It's now nighttime, and Jerry tells Elaine, Mike said this about me. She says, you've got to open your vault. I can't. I promise Kramer. You've got to open the vault. Then we get Newman here. And, he agrees, front first. If you're going front first, you're reducing everyone to jungle law.
Before we do it, before we get into that part, though, just a little shout out to that lovely little wordplay where they're talking about the vault, and Jerry goes, "Oi, the vault."
Yeah, oi, the vault.
Oi, the vault. Oh.
What are you asking this guy for?
Who's talking to you?
He's right. Never.
Oh, yeah?
Well, what if you got 10 car lengths? You have to pull all the way up to the front car?
Well, I suppose if you got 10 car lengths.
When do you ever have 10 car lengths?
What about Sundays and holidays, huh? Oh, please.
I've got here the guy that played Mike. What was his name again? Lee Ahrenberg.
Lee Ahrenberg.
He nearly flubs his line here, but they left it in, obviously. So he's yelling and carrying on, and it's when he's about to say, "What if there's ten car lengths?" Right? But he says, "What if you got 10 car lengths?" He nearly goes to say car lengths before he says, "What if you've got 10 car lengths?" But they left it in. He just goes, "What if you've got 10 car lengths?" It comes across like a guy who's just flustered, but clearly he flubbed his line.
You got to take advantage of happy accidents like that. If it sort of adds a bit of realism to the scene, then by all means, throw it in. Use it.
Newman then changes his tune. He sold Newman. Maybe you are right, mate. Maybe you are right. Maybe going in front first does work, you know. Well, if there's 10 car lengths. Then we get a beautiful woman. She compliments George on his hat. And then Newman, just out of nowhere, "Can I try it on?" I'm like, fuck off, Newman.
Dick move. Yeah. Dick move by the dick master Newman.
But I did love Wayne Knight's reaction when George forces the hat on his head. "I was defending your parking." He's all crying and all upset. Then the fight has started. But everyone's like, "Oh, I want to go." But no one's going if he's going. And I'm not going if they're going. So everyone's got a beef with somebody in this scene.
"Well, if he's going, I'm not going."
"But it's your house."
"I still don't have to go."
"Well, I don't want to go. Jerry's not going."
"Why won't you go if I go?"
"Why? I'll tell you why."
"No, don't, Jerry."
"Like you didn't call me a phony."
"What? Thanks. Real good."
"All right."
"Jerry, first of all, I think you completely misunderstood what I said. I meant it in a complimentary way. I mean, you know, when people say he's bad, it really means he's good, that sort of thing. You know, it's slang.
Use it in a sentence."
"Man, that Michael Jordan is so phony. Why didn't you tell him?
Have you ever been in a moment where you've said something about somebody and they've found out about it and you've tried to talk your way around it rather than just going, "You're right, mate, you got me, I said that"? Like, are you a person who would try and justify what you said, or will you just go, "Sorry, mate, wasn't thinking straight"?
I would probably be the latter. I'm sorry, mate.
It's always better to just go, "Sorry, mate, I don't know why I said that. It's a fucking stupid thing for me to say. My bad. You know, I can't deny it. I did it. I think if you do it that way, most guys will go, "Yeah, all right, whatever. Yeah. Let's go get a beer."
I've done that. Yeah.
But if you try and justify your lie, it just makes the other person even angrier.
I mean, Mike doing the whole, it's like when you say something's bad, but it's really good.
Man,
like that Michael Jordan, what a phony.
Man, that Michael Jordan is so phony. Why'd you tell him?
Putting on the accent. Oh, dear.
But the cops then arrive and they have a debate about the parking situation as well. And we get Jerry. He's just arrived home. He's about to watch the fight. And the fight is over. 8, 9, 10.
Ding, ding, ding.
Larry David was the voiceover, the boxing guy. Boxing.
Yes, I read.
Boxing announcer, I should say. So the episode finishes with some stand-up talking about people killing each other for a park in New York. As you're saying, it's like a musical chairs game that where everyone sat down in 1964. It's true, though. They're making more and more cars, but they're not making more and more parking spaces. That's what it feels like in Geelong. You're adding jobs into the city, but you ain't giving us places to fucking park.
In fact, you're taking away parks. Yeah. I mean, very Geelong reference, but that's what we do here at the Four Finger Discount Network. We're bringing Geelong to the world. You know, we should actually be sponsored by the City of Grand Geelong because we're doing more for tourism than just about anybody except Joel Selwood.
We should have to pay our rates, that's for damn sure.
That is 100% correct. Dan and I were talking about rates before we came on air.
You know what really grinds my gears? Them rates.
I'm already paying for my house. You want me to pay for a little chunk of my house? What? There's a street in Geelong called Jerringham Street.
They fucked
it. Used to have parks, you know. The parks that you would just drive into. They'd be angular parks. Now, they're coming from a good place. They're coming from a place of good intentions, like, "Oh, we're going to put some bike lanes in. We want to start, you know, we want people to ride more rather than drive. You know, it's good for the environment, good for the planet." It's bad for Jerringham Street.
Oh, it's bad for all Geelong.
It's bad for Geelong.
What did Flanders would say? Because I can't blame you because you had good intentions.
tensions. But now there's all these parallel parks. It's like a third or a quarter of the parks that used to be there. And this was a place where a lot of people used to park. It's ridiculous.
I remember the first time, because what they did, people listening at home, it used to be a four-lane street. And they got rid of, we're going one the direction that goes into the city. They got rid of the left lane and just ended it and just created parallel parking, yeah. Right? And well, I remember the first time I was driving up, I went, I didn't realize that the parking had ended, because it's not really like signed off. It's just sort of like a little brick thing across behind the cars where they have to park. And I'm waiting for these cars to go. I'm like, go, go. I'm honking my horn. And I realize these cars are parked. I'm like, what happened here?
What's going on here?
So, yeah, that is it's for a bike lane. For a bike lane.
Yeah. I know. I mean, like we said, good intentions, but yeah, not really thought through. It's funny. I was over at Lou's the other night. She said, have you seen this? It was on this thing on YouTube about 10 minutes. It was a film made. It was like a tourist thing about Geelong.
Oh, from the 1950s? Yeah, yeah. I saw someone posting that around, yeah.
Yeah. And first of all, it had like the Trey Parker voice as the narrator.
Welcome
like,
to Geelong.
Welcome to Geelong. That's exactly what it was like. It's a city on the ground.
City on the ground.
Look at all these new cars coming out of Ford. And now we've got Shell. It's pumping out natural gas. But Lou and I were looking at it going, shit, Geelong looks nice.
Look at all that space. Remember when we had space?
Look at every family has a car, and every car has a park in town. Oh, man.
Everyone has their own park.
I was like in Lost, like, we got to go back.
I saw the first minute of it, and I was like, I can't watch this. It's going to make me too sad.
Yeah, that's precisely it. But no, we watched the whole thing. But about halfway, Lou says, you're going to keep doing that voice? I said, probably.
I sure am. What? You don't like it?
You bet I am. What's more, I'm bringing it into the bedroom.
Don't worry, buddy. Anyway, for those of you who aren't aware of what we're doing.
Are you in the mood for love?
For anyone who isn't aware, this is what we do on our South Park podcast from start to finish.
So, yeah, become a patron.
Listen to Going Down to South Park, available every second Monday on your feed. So check out that one if you're a South Park fan. But anyway, this has been The Parking Space. A good episode to vent, really, isn't it?
It really has been. I think Lou has lost two therapy clients.
It's like the...
Because we've worked out all our anger and rage.
It's episodes like Festivus, just airing our grievances.
Indeed, indeed. But no, Parking Space, very good episode. And Noel, I think this was a very good episode of Talking Seinfeld.
Yes, next one we're going to be reviewing is the season finale, one of the big episodes of Seinfeld that leads into a big story arc for season 4. It is The Key. So listen out for that one here on Talking Seinfeld. The Key is coming up for you in a couple of weeks. But this has been The Parking Space. Don't forget, guys, if you do enjoy this show, you can support us by being a member of the Four Finger Discount family on Patreon. Link is in the description of this podcast. But for now, Mr. Davis, any final words for all those listeners out there?
When I don't like you, you got problems.